Good afternoon.
Hi, it's just Mijanu, I think.
Hi, Mijanu. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm well, thank you. How about you?
Good.
Yeah, we had we finally, about 4 minutes ago, they were trying to get our phones working properly post-hurricane, and so mine has been fine the whole time. I'm not sure why, but all of the CSAs have had issues with phones not going where they should, and then if you don't immediately transfer them, then they get dropped. So can you imagine?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so Janet just went to, I told her, just go get something to eat because you could tell she was getting a little hangry for food. So I said she should go and do that. I also have my my intern, Amanda, in the office. So I thought I should grab her as well. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You want to jump on, or are you waiting? Okay, I'm on. Okay. So, wow, it was really interesting listening to myself, which I will hear myself say this week after the call. I'm gonna put it on speaker. Do you want to do it in here, or do you want to stay out there? Okay, your food's coming. Okay, then order food. All right. Okay.
Food's good for stress.
I know with myself that I cannot problem solve if I'm hungry, you know.
No, I know. So. Yeah, and I'm a little bit hypoglycemic, so I need to eat, you know. I need to stay hydrated, and I need to eat, or I do things that I'm not as proud of.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
So hopefully, are you on or not on? You're not on. Okay, you're ordering. Okay, good. So, but she's not on yet. But we can start. Introducing you to Amanda Delaplane. She's here as well.
Hi.
Hi, Amanda. Welcome.
And she listened to the call. And. She said she learned stuff about me, so I'm concerned I should listen to the call again.
What did you learn, right? That's always the question. Oh, my God, what did I say?
Well, one of the funny things was I told the story about going to a party and being asked about Andrew Schultz many times at the party, and it was at her grandparents' house that I had that I was at that party.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So she
knew
that.
Great.
I'm not sure how you want to proceed, but it's your show.
I'm here.
Welcome back. I hope.
Hello.
You ordered the food, but you don't have it yet.
I had to. There's always extra steps, so I had to get through the final steps of payment, and now I'm good to go. But ready to be here and move forward with the coaching. No worries about me. I'm good.
All right, so what questions does anybody have before we get started on anything that we talked about in the first week or anything? I mean, we're going to cover a lot of stuff in Supernova, but anything that's hanging you up or making you anxious about Supernova or?
Hanging up and making me anxious.
Good. For me, I just want to be a little bit more. I want to be as prepared as I possibly can for each of the sessions. And I want to maybe, since it's been a couple weeks with the hurricane, maybe we can go up over where I and Mijanu and obviously Amanda, where we should be like right now in terms of our preparation. I don't know if Mijanu agrees with that, but, or feels the same way. But for me, I want to make sure I'm prepared and, you know,
right,
just get caught up to speed.
I would agree that my anxiety has been partially, you know, feeling like we got off to a good first call start, and then that was it, and, you know, to no fault of anyone's except for Irma. But so now I feel like, oh my gosh, did we lose something in that time period?
Yeah. No. I mean, it's, you know, these are all self-contained units, but it's a process, and it's part of the process is getting to know what it is and to be enthusiastic about selling it. That's those things go hand in glove with each other. You're not going to be enthusiastic about selling it if you don't understand it and you don't understand the benefits to you and to the client. So I would say one of the things you want to do is at this stage, you know, we talked about introducing it to your team and to your clients. So the question becomes, how comfortable are you in talking about Supernova and understanding the benefits of Supernova? Are you stuck on any of that? And I would say, Janet, that's kind of directed at you. Everybody's okay with Supernova?
Yeah. I think Janet, she's feeling a little bit overwhelmed right now, and I can understand it.
Yeah.
So I will answer that question, give Janet a moment, but from my perspective, because I think that I'm not 100% comfortable with what I'm presenting to the clients. I mean, we listen to you, and you have it so well. You're so comfortable saying what you're saying, and you know, of course, this takes a long time, and you've been doing this a very long time. So that makes me feel a little bit of pressure about knowing what I'm feeling comfortable with, what I'm presenting to clients when I sit with them. But the basic concepts and I went to a thing this week about training for an Ironman, and the discussion was all about taking it, just like I did with marathons, down to very, very small increments to build on something. And so I'm trying to get my mind there instead of getting stuck on the big picture. You know what I mean? And when I went to New York this last trip, it was right after our call, and I got my presentation, my normal, you know, what I bring to have a quarterly or annual or whatever review with a client. And I thought of what you said about, you know, having a system and presenting, you know, having the, what I forget what you call it. It's in the folder, the topic of the month.
Yeah.
And I only met with two clients there because we did a nonprofit event that was the focus. But I met with two clients, and with both clients, I presented the same topic of the month after doing the performance review. And
okay.
My thought was, you know, if you had said to me, I want you to go and sell this, like they've been telling us forever, this benefit that the clients have, I want you to go and present this benefit to all of your clients, I would say, well, this client will like, I mean, you've heard this a million times, I'm sure. This client will like it, that one won't care, this one will think this, that one will think that.
Right.
And I've actually lectured other FAs about not doing that, but I do it myself. So I tried to go with what you said, and I met with the two clients who are night and day clients. One is the high-maintenance, spoiled client that we talked about last time, and the other is that, you know, she FaceTimed me one day when I was jogging, and I answered, and I jogged, and we chatted, and she said she just wanted to see how I was. You know, like that.
Yeah.
So
yep.
She was happy to see Miami during my jog and whatever. So I presented the same product to both of them with very little expectation, and the results were like, it was the coolest thing because they were both excited about it, you know. And one of them is a very, very, very wealthy man who doesn't have time for anything and, you know, blah, 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 and has everything at his disposal, you would think, the way he talks. He was excited about the Platinum American Express card by Morgan Stanley on my presentation. I would have never thought to tell him we even had it, you know. And both clients, you know, so in other words, night and day clients, same presentation, same product, and they were both interested in it. So I learned a lesson from that. And that's why I say, like, I'm trying to take the little pieces and utilize them in order to get to the big presentation, but I'm a little intimidated by being able to do what you talk about.
Good comments. So you're going to get better and better and better at it, and you're going to get more and more encouraged because of the feedback you're getting from your clients. So let's face it, it's because we're giving them something for free, really. I mean, they're not charging them any more for this, and we're giving them more. So they're like, yay, this is great. Plus, they're getting more of your time, and you're not going to be using that time to sell them something. So they're like, whoa, this is very refreshing. You know, they like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, we wouldn't do it if the clients didn't like it, right? I wouldn't be teaching you this.
Right.
So you're not going to, you're going to be shocked that some of your busiest clients are going to say, fine, take out their day planner, or take out their calendar, or computer, or whatever, and say, when should we meet? Mm-hmm. So be ready for that. Be ready for them to just plug you right in, because that's their life, especially the busy people.
Yeah, the other thing I'm a little nervous about is the proximity. So when you read the description of, okay, the folders come out, they get put in on the desk and so forth and so on. I mean, my stuff is crammed into a New York visit. So that intimidates me a little bit.
No, don't worry. We did this and we've done it. And you take them in a brief, you may have to carry a briefcase because you got your folders with you. Okay, I had one guy that went to spring training, and he had two of those. Have you ever seen those CPA briefcases?
Yes.
You may not want to carry those, but you can put them in your suitcase, you know. But so you don't have to.
It's not about taking the stuff, because I usually do that now. But it's more about the consistency of scheduling. So what?
All right, so here's what you do in New York, okay? You figure out when is the best time for you to meet with them and for them to meet with you, and then you work your calendar, and then that becomes their permanent calendar. So let's take your visit to New York, and you're going to meet with three people a day, six people over the, I don't know, how many did you try and meet with in a day? You try and meet more than three?
Yeah, I probably four, two in the morning, two at night, and then a meal.
Okay, so four, right? So
So
you'd have one at 9, one at 12, one at 3, and one at 6.
Mm-hmm.
So now that, except for the one at 6, every one of those would be your regular call times.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. So say you're going to go up on a Monday or Friday. You pick the times. So you're going to go whatever, day that you normally would see them, that's going to be their day.
Okay.
Okay. And then you go, 9, 12, 3, and 5, maybe, You may not want to do that on that 5 o'clock all the time, but maybe make it, 1, 12, 3, and 4, okay?
Yeah, and New York 5 is perfect, actually.
Yeah, so that would, and then the next day, if you spend 2 days, you want to do 8 people, it would be, like, Monday would be, 9, 12, 3, and 4, and then the next day would be 9, 12, 3, and 4. The 4 would become 6 when it came to the in-person meeting for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
Make sense?
Okay. Yes.
So that's what we found works the best. You back to back them, and then that becomes their time, their day. So it's the third Monday and Tuesday of the month. Maybe that's not going to work you know, perfectly, but try and make it work, you know, from then on.
Okay.
So you figure out what day of the month, or, you know, what week of the month you're going to be visiting them, and then that becomes their week, first, second, third, fourth week.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
And then you're, and then, you know, that becomes, it becomes actually easier for you because everything is scheduled ahead of time.
Okay.
So that, those are the good questions. I mean, there are no bad questions when it comes to seriously understanding supernova, but that's a nuanced question. It's an important question because you're not the first one that travels. Usually they're going the other way, though.
That's true.
New York to Miami.
And then the review versus non-review month.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, most of the time, if you think of it more like we're going to do a financial plan and then we're going to implement the financial plan over time,
mm-hmm.
we're going to include performance in there, but it's going to be more about your life and the implementation of your life plan, then it's going to be about performance.
Mm.
So the in-person meetings are really planning reviews. The quarterly meetings, are, you have more time, so you'll do some planning in there. But you'll probably do give them performance numbers. Some people want performance numbers every month. That's okay. You can give them to them. They take 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get into why this and why that, but you can. I mean, let's face it. This is their time. So if they want to talk about themselves and their children, their grandchildren, and setting up a some kind of estate planning tool, that's what you want to talk about.
Okay.
Okay? So the topic of the month may go to hell because they just had a new grandbaby.
Yep.
And that's what they want to talk about. And you go, wonderful. Let's set up the 529 now. Yay. You know, mm-hmm. they're excited. They want to do something for the baby, and you do too. And so yeah, off you go. And that wasn't in the plan. That wasn't on the agenda unless they put it on the agenda. But that takes precedent over everything else, unless there's something that you need to do. Like, oh, we're going to, oh, by the way, we need to switch managers. This guy's underperforming, and I haven't been happy with him for 3 months and 6 months or a year, and it's time to change.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go, fine, you know, and you just change from this to this. Those things become less important when you're spending more time on the planning side of things.
Mm.
Performance becomes just another part of it rather than the sole part of it. So there's an education piece to this. There's an information piece. There's a communications piece. It's kind of a board of directors meeting thinking. We like to frame it as you're the chief financial officer. They're the CEO of their company. And as you know, as you get higher net worth clients and their money becomes in the tens of millions, it becomes a business. I mean, it's a cash flow business that generates income and grows, and just like any other business. So you need to, you know, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
So you'll find it, you know, you have good relationships with your clients. You've been a relationship builder. You're going to be very comfortable with this. What they're going to like is the fact that you have an agenda and then you send them an executive summary. You're going to like that because you like to stay organized. They're going to like it because that means they don't have to remember everything.
Yeah.
But they know what you did. And it also, you know, let's face it, it confirms that you both agreed on what you agreed on. You know, we're actually going to do...
I can point out recent events that if I had done that, it would have avoided some misunderstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. People, there's, look, you know, I asked the guy this morning that I've been coaching for a year, how many different acquisition strategies do we teach at Supernova? Because he was focused on one, and I wanted him to, because you can obsess over something because you think it's going to really work, and so you obsess over it. I said, and he said, three, right? And I said, seven. Okay? And I've been coaching him for a year, right? So the reality is, you know, my rule is it's not the FA's responsibility to understand something until I've told them five times.
Mm-hmm.
That was my five-time rule when I was a manager. So I would approach you just four or five times just as if I'd never told you something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's because people are busy and they don't hear and they don't understand.
Yeah.
And they're not listening because they had a fight with their spouse or something, you know. So it's very teaching and learning, I mean, are challenging things. It's challenging to learn. It's challenging to teach. And throw in huge changes. I'm not just teaching information. I'm asking you to initiate changes that are going to disrupt your life and make you do things differently. In the end, everything will be more efficient. But it does turn everything upside down for a little bit. And so that even becomes more challenging to get people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you've seen the benefits and you understand it, so you're past that, you know, it being totally disturbing.
Right.
Okay. We identified the min and max. The question is, did we identify our ideal client? Who is your ideal client? If you were going to describe them.
I'm going to describe my ideal client. Okay. My ideal client is way too busy to be micromanaging their assets. They know that relying on somebody who is their area of expertise to do certain things like, you know, having a CPA or having an attorney or having a financial advisor, portfolio manager is valuable. Like they see the value in that. My current client profile looks like, and they tend to be entrepreneurs, or either entrepreneurs who have, you know, gone beyond their wildest dreams and success in their business, in their businesses, or they are people who've inherited family wealth and are very trepidatious about, you know, how they deal with their inheritance, and they live very carefully, but yes, very want to make additional funds and carry that on as a legacy to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you could choose between those two, which would you choose?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. My experience with the entrepreneur is that they tend to want to be a little bit more involved in the process, which can be fun sometimes, but it also can add stress. Whereas the person who's trying to carry on a legacy feels very intimidated by money, oddly.
No, I understand.
Yeah, so they rely on me, which is a different kind of stress. I don't know that I could choose between the two. I feel like my book is, you know, a pretty good split between those two descriptions.
Okay, that's fine. I was just curious.
I mean, most, you know, they're, I would say.
I would think it's hard to prospect for people that are going to inherit money, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
But prospecting for entrepreneurs is much easier. So, you know, from a marketing point of view, having an expertise in one of those two areas, I would suggest probably the entrepreneur is probably the most where the benefits would be the greatest to you.
Yeah, the multi-generational situation, I think that is the focus there is just on making sure that I have a broad-based relationship with the entire family.
It's really important. Yep.
And I really love that. But the entrepreneur, I think I probably have more fun with because I learn from them. They learn from me. You know, it's a,
right.
It's a very interesting relationship. And they do love to introduce you to people.
Right. And the others don't. They want to keep their money kind of quiet, right?
Very much, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good. So two benefits to the entrepreneur is they're fun and they're more willing to introduce.
Yeah. True.
And they're not as scared all the time.
No, they're risk takers for the most part. They took risks to build their businesses. And they,
right.
They understand what that means, what the conversation means. So, yes, that's true.
So the other ones, you feel more as a giver and a caretaker and responsible, and that gives you a certain amount of pleasure too.
Yes, and it really gives me, like, it makes me feel good about what I do, that they trust me and ask me to take care of kids and grandkids, you know? That is, like, it's a huge compliment when that happens.
Right.
And generally, the entrepreneurs are, you kind of have to force it. You have to force, they don't want to talk about their own demise. Entrepreneurs are going to live forever. And,
right.
And the multi-generational inheritors are going to die tomorrow.
Because death has been a big part of their future.
It's really.
Yeah, it's a different way of thinking, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting. So you're going to talk. It's really interesting because I think of myself much more as an entrepreneur, but I'm very interested in, not in death, but in strategies that can protect assets from evil Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think about my families that I have that are, you know, the multi-generational wealth, and they always are asking questions of, to be sure that their money is protected for, you know, whomever and for whatever. And the entrepreneur is like, okay, yeah, I know we need to talk about that, but not today. They never mind, you know,
right.
Protecting
forever young, and they can always make it up. If I lose some, I can make it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we gotta, you know, we're going to talk about different things with different people, aren't we?
Yeah.
So we're not gonna force the entrepreneur until he's 50 to start thinking about this stuff, estate planning and stuff. But the other guys, unless it's huge, unless he gets a ton of money, then they got to think. But the others, we can talk about grats and cruts and all kinds of things, and they'd be interested in,
yeah, sure, yeah.
Greatest ways of saving money, right? Cool. Okay. So you're going to be really good at this because you're already good at it. See, people ask me all the time, what do I talk about in these meetings? I'm like, but you don't normally talk to your brothers and sisters and friends about, you know, when you're talking about money, what do you talk about?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you can talk about life, you know, you can talk about kids and grandkids and sports and, you know, hobbies and fun things, whatever. you don't always have to talk about, you know, you want to get back on the agenda, but there's a time to, you know, affiliate. And talk, I mean, I talk a little about fly fishing here and there and whatever people want to talk about, marathons or triathlons. Or, and, you know, we have, you know, I try and have as much in common as I can, and the same with you, you know, it's fun. Okay, let's talk about niches then, which is a natural transition.
Okay.
As I said, my friend remembered, you know what's interesting is that he's new in the business and he's spending most of his time on LinkedIn. And he's, you know, he's getting 100 LinkedIn connections that gets 30, or he gets 100 invitations for LinkedIn. He gets about 30 responses where they say yes. He gets about 10 conversations going, 5 meetings, and ends up with 1 client. So it's like the old days of cold calling, and that's what he's been doing. So he forgot about, you know, centers of influence, niches, mastermind groups, and all the other tools we teach. But it, when you integrate them together, it works really well. You think, well, I can't do 7 things. Well, it's funny, but you can. And they all integrate, and you use one to get to the other. And so one of the things that you want to think about is, okay, if you are going to create a partnership with 4 other financial advisors from other firms and you are going to put it together, how long would that take you to do it? Well, it would take you a long time, right? It'd probably take you 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Get a really good team together. You'd have to recruit them. You'd have to convince them. You'd have to be some synergy. You'd probably have to go through, you know, to get 4 people or 5 people to get, let's say, 4 people together. You'd have to recruit 3 others. Probably have to go through, I don't know, 9 or 10, 12 maybe, conversations, maybe more, sit down, serious thinking, to get to that. You get to that 3 people. So when we're looking at creating centers of influence, we may have to talk to 5 or 6 CPAs before we get the one that's going to work for us. And one of the things I said to him, you never waste a call. It's never going to be a wasted call when you meet with somebody or you talk to them about joining you as a person of interest, a person that is going to be a center of influence for you, and you're going to be one for him or her. When you're talking about that shared relationship, is never wasted if they say, no, I'm too busy. You know, I'm just too busy. Things are going too well. I don't have time. Or I'm not interested because I'm too happy. I'm too satisfied. So what you say is, great, terrific, I understand. Who could you enthusiastically endorse in your industry that might be a good fit for me in such an endeavor as I'm about to engage in? And they might say, oh, it's a guy in our office. He's a real go-getter. He's, you know, he's a rainmaker. He's fabulous, very enthusiastic. He's, you know, a little younger, but he's really going to be a big superstar. I think he'd be a great guy for you to talk to. And so that's who you go and meet with. So you haven't wasted the conversation, person that you had counted on to be your one of your people in your, as a center of influence, says no, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you get an introduction to somebody else. And they can be a big help in narrowing it down as to who would be a good fit. So what we're going to build is initially a group, 6 centers of influence, and behind each one of those, so let's say we have a CPA, an attorney, a business broker, a commercial realtor, a residential realtor, and you know, maybe an estate planning attorney. So what we want is we want one person, using the baseball analogy, forgive me, one person up to bat, one person on deck, and one person in the bullpen. So one person, you know, you're meeting with monthly, that's your center of influence. One person on deck, that you're meeting quarterly with him or her. And then semi-annually, you're meeting with a person in the bullpen. So in the dugout, excuse me. See, so it's a good relationship with all of them, but one is your primary, and that's the intense relationship. And that's who you're probably going to but when you refer, your firm requires that you introduce three different CPAs. So there's your three.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to ask you, which one would you, quote, enthusiastically endorse, or which one would you suggest? That's what they'll say. And you say, well, the one that gets the most enthusiastic endorsements is this one.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I think this one would be, frankly, I think they'd be a better fit for you, but I want you to interview all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So now we're giving, you know, even though we're giving out probably three times as many introductions as we're getting because we have to introduce three people each time. So that's a good thing because, remember, we want to give like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're meeting with these people, what are we thinking? We're thinking, how can I help them? What can I give to them? How can I make their life better? Not how am I going to get an introduction.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the difference here and the key to our success in this process. So what niches, so that's centers of influence. And here's the unique thing. We're going to pick two niches. We can have more, but minimum of two. And inside each niche, eventually we want to create a center of influence.
Now, Rob, could you go?
Yeah.
Sorry. Could you please just go through just mention what the three parts of the center of influence are?
Okay, you're going to.
You don't have to explain it, but what were the names again? Because I was confused with the niches versus the center of influence.
Oh, okay. Center of influence, by definition, I'll give you the definition. Center of influence is a person that likes you, trusts you, listens mm-hmm. to you, has done a financial plan, but is willing to refer to you without you asking.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we have we have two different kinds of centers of influence. We have our natural centers of influence, who are our clients that do this all the time, love to refer us, and that's a center of influence. They love to refer us.
Yep.
And then you have professional centers of influence, and these are people that may already be on the books, and they love to refer us. But they probably will have slightly more qualified opportunities for us. Not necessarily, but our clients tend to refer people because they haven't been trained. They tend to give us, which you're going to do, you're going to train them so they don't do this, but they tend to just give us people rather than people that are qualified. So some of these natural centers of influence come from our clients, or you know, use the example of UPS. I hired a couple guys from UPS because you know all their managers became multi-zillionaires overnight and didn't know what to do with the money. So we hired their own people from their corporate finance department to work at our firm. And they were able to help those people, coach them, and open their accounts. So we gathered a lot of assets that way. by being very focused on a niche.
Okay.
So that would be a target niche. A natural niche would be, or that could be if it wasn't your niche, you didn't work for UPS originally, that would be a target. If you work there, that would be your natural niche.
Okay.
Okay. So what do you have for niches? Let's take entrepreneurs. That's a category. It's not really a niche.
Mm-hmm.
It would be biotechnology entrepreneurs would be a niche. Artificial intelligence or robotics would be a niche. People in the entertainment business, even more narrow. People in the, in the sports world, even more narrow. People that work for a particular basketball team. That would be a very targeted niche.
Well, when I look at my book, my entrepreneurs are mostly real estate investors.
Okay.
Even if their initial businesses were something else, they attribute a lot of their wealth to their real estate investments. So even though I have the shipping tycoon, he has always been very active in real estate investing, or my client who started a very successful recruiting firm, he always says that the one thing he knows and does well, aside from building his business, is real estate. The proof is there. My automotive business retiree made most of their wealth in real estate, in owning the real estate that the dealerships were on. So
are these the automotive people, are they dealers? They own dealerships?
Not anymore, but they did. Yeah.
That's what they did, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I worked in my family's automotive dealership before I came
right.
into this. So I think that's definitely a niche, but it's a really hard one. I could probably focus on it, but because there's a lot of, I don't know. I guess it's just something that I stayed away from because when I left the business and came into this business, I thought that would be an automatic, a natural niche, as you say. And the response I got was, how do we know what you're doing in that industry? You just got in it. I mean, they flat out would say it to me.
Which wouldn't be the case now. See?
Right. And so sometimes I forget that 19 years have gone by.
Right. And so you would have credibility on both sides.
Right. And actually, just got off the phone with Jeff Burr. And they still call me and talk to me about the business.
Yeah, I think that is something that we can, and I would suggest you do, is make that a target.
Okay. I like that.
It's good to be doing that. They're still making a fortune. It didn't used to be a business where people made this kind of money, but they make a lot of money now.
Well, that's why I say, the people who, I'm saying names to Jenna Nuss because she's fairly new in my business, and Amanda too. The Walshes and Burr. These are people who are in the were in the automotive business, but they're a good part of their wealth came from the fact that they owned the land that their dealerships were on, and they're triple net lease CVS's, McDonald's, and stuff like that now.
Wow, yeah.
Or they sold the land to the manufacturer.
Well, Well, it's very important to understand. See, you know the industry because you were in it. And that, think about them doing business with somebody else versus you. Mm-hmm. It's really not smart on their part to do that, right? Because you understand them. You know where they came from. You know how they think. You know how they made their money, really. You know how, what kind of risk they took. So you get it, see? And it's like somebody said to me, you should, you know, think about potentially selling your business to this guy. And I said, well, he's a great coach, but he's never been in our industry. So I couldn't do that. I couldn't sell my business to somebody that hadn't been in our business because they, to me, they have only a limited amount of credibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So not only do you know the industry, but you were in it.
Yes.
So that's huge credibility.
Okay. So it really is more of a natural.
It's a natural niche. Right. So just for conversation purposes and for, you know, you and I speaking the language of, quote, supernova, the automobile dealers are a niche. Okay, real estate is not. That's an investment.
Right.
Unless you have realtors. Or
people. Oh, I have two large families that are real estate developers.
They're multiple
generation real estate developers.
Okay, so we're gonna, instead of investors, we're gonna put developers down as a legitimate lint, because that's an industry, that's a business.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's a tough one too, because what I found with them is that they're very concerned about, quote unquote, diversification of assets, which to them doesn't mean, you know, Saxon's cash. It means UBS, Barclays, Merrill, Morgan Stanley, Citibank.
Yeah, and what I have a great argument for that, so we'll work on that. Remind me of that, okay?
Okay. Yeah.
We can bust that one up. So we have three niches that you've mentioned. Are there others? Real estate developers, shipping tycoons, recruiters, automobile dealers.
From the, I don't know if this is considered a niche, but from the multi-generational wealth side of things, it's generally, for me, it's matriarchs.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to patriarchs.
How did you get them?
When I was in New York, I would do an informational seminar one Saturday every month. And they came. And they referred.
Interesting.
So I have...
So they want education. They like education.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure that's a niche. Now, if you had a divorce attorney that referred you matriarchs of estate cases, that the niche would be family law, you know, would be a niche.
Okay.
So we got to have something that ties them together. If they belong to the same club or they play, you know, bridge at the same club, that would be a kind of a nest or a niche. It's really a nest. People congregating for a single purpose.
No, they're definitely not congregators.
Yeah.
I had, I did a, I did a, what do we call it, a volunteer event in New York that Amanda put together for me at the Ronald McDonald House, and I had four. I had four of these ladies there.
Yeah.
And they're very controlling. So there was no collaborating, nesting stuff going on there. It was, I'm in charge. So we went across the street for cocktails after, and only two of the ladies came, and they chatted with each other, but they didn't really like each other very much because they were both, you know, very controlling. So that was an interesting experience for me because I've always had, like, cocktail parties at the holidays or whatever, and people come and they go, but I've never forced them to work together before like we did. And I think it was great, and I would do it again, but it really made me see that personalities were very, very similar, and every single one of them was extremely sure of themselves. They knew exactly what everybody else should be doing. But when it comes to money, not so much. Well, that's not true.
Yeah. Well, they're true matriarchs then.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So somehow you appeal to them for some reason. That'd be interesting to them.
I don't know.
But anyway, we don't have time for that. That's psychology, which we have time for someday, but we've got too much to cover. Okay. So what I want you to do, your homework for this week, is to identify and just kind of go through and take another look at your practice and see, is there anything else that we missed? And then, you know, how do I and do I want to build my professional centers of influence?
Okay.
You know, do I have natural centers of influence and professional centers of influence? Who are they specifically now? How many do I have of the, say, six different categories of centers of professional influence? How many do I have? How many do I need to get? How many natural centers of influence do I have where they refer me without me asking? And would it make sense for me to educate them so that they know how best to introduce me and how best to find the right clients and what is it that I really am looking for? So there's a lot of components here. So part of what we do is through these, and we suggest that you meet with these people monthly, and you think, oh, my God, that's a lot. Well, there's a lot of education that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You need to really teach them, and you need to help them. So you're going to put extra effort into these people by helping them. At the same time, you're going to teach them what you do, how you do it, why you do it, who's the best fit, who's not a good fit, so that when they help you, they're helping you accurately. So I think we're fine on our absolute minimum and our target minimum, $1 million and $2.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Target 70 clients. We're happy with 70 clients. Is that still the case?
Yes.
Okay. We want to think about that calendar in terms of, you know, if we're going to make these trips to New York, what is the best day, week, time, day, week of the month, et cetera, to plug them in and then build that before you actually ask them so you know where they will fit. And don't try not to give them too much choice. You know where their best fit anyway is because you've been doing this a while. Try and get everybody to comply as best you can with your schedule. Begin to notify your clients. You did a good job. You had some good experience. Just keep that going. Start notifying more clients of the good news. Natural and target niches. and then your six centers of influence.
Okay.
Okay, and if you need to, I mean, it's a good exercise to go through those clients, your existing clients, and see if there's a niche there that you didn't think about.
Mm-hmm.
And then are there centers of influence, natural centers of influence in there that we need to nurture some more? We're gonna feed and water the best ones. We're gonna create big pumpkins.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Good time of year for that.
Okay, that's it. Everybody on board. Everybody get it today? Any questions?
Is there anything more that we should be doing in the meantime before next session with the folders?
You can be doing, as long as you start to build the folders, you're going to need a folder for you, for each client, and then you're going to be giving each client a folder. So you can begin to build those out now. You want to make sure you know what goes in the folders. I mean, there's an introductory page in there that I typically would let people take out. Now I don't want you to take it out. I want you to keep it in there. And a lot of different reasons, but... I'll show you.
Okay.
So
I printed out what is necessary. I need to re-look and see which one's which, but okay. Okay, so that's part of our assignment is to start building.
Yes, that's part of your assignment, and we don't hammer you on that because typically at this stage you had 300 clients and you're trying to get down to 70.
Right.
Fortunately, that's not the case here, so we don't need to waste time on that. We can focus on the stuff that we're going to be doing in the chapters to come, which is getting organized, all right?
Yeah.
So, you know, getting the scheduler, understanding how the scheduler works, getting get the folders. And I start most people out now much earlier in terms of building their folders and getting that. It's not in the homework. But we usually jump ahead.
Okay.
Okay. So you're doing great. We're all caught up.
We're all caught up. Yes. Okay.
Didn't miss anything.
Take a breath. All right. Thank you so much. Look forward to the next
one. Very well.
Yes. Thank you.
I'll look forward to talking. Thank you. Bye-bye.